Now I'd like to introduce Salvatore Florio, who's going to be talking about a really very original piece of work that he's been doing for us in developing a core constructional ontology, a theory of parts, sets, and relations. Salvatore, over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Matthew. I will share screen and you should be able to hear me. Is the audio okay?
We can hear you.
Great. Okay,
And
so
that looks good.
we have reached the seventh circle of information management, where the core constructional ontology lives. What I want to do in the presentation is give you an overview of the type of work we have been doing on this approach to ontology, and the context for it has already been given to some extent by Chris in the previous presentation. I will highlight some of the connections with four-dimensional ontology as well. Now, this is a team effort. A number of people have contributed to the effort. And here you see a list of those who have so far contributed. The list is likely to grow as as the project continues. Reference to authorship here has to do with a technical report that we are working on, is in progress and will likely be published in the near future. Now, there is a disclaimer I need to make, is that we are working on this project and this is our first attempt. Chris highlighted that we took an MVP approach. This means that we are accepting some compromises in order to produce an early proof of concept. We're breaking new ground, so we expect to improve and extend our approach in future work. And this is why feedback is especially welcome and might really help us shape the project and determine the direction in which we go. We look forward to hearing your feedback. There is another disclaimer I should make, is that some of the work here involves highly technical notions from logic and mathematics. I will do my best to convey this in informal terms and make it accessible. In the Q&A, I'm happy to say more and explain some concepts if that's useful. Now, the plan for the presentation is the following. In the first part, shorter, I will give some background on constructional ontology. We'll say what that roughly is. Then I will focus on our approach and highlight its key features, and then give you an overview of the formalization of this approach that we have developed. And by formalization, we mean formalization in formal logic. So let's begin with some background in constructional ontology. What is it? Well, one way to give the idea behind the ontology is the following. So on the constructional approach, you start with some objects, which are often called givens, or even with an empty domain. And then you construct the rest of the ontology by applying selected constructors. So the ontology can be characterized by the givens with which you start, the constructors available, and the constructed objects that result from application of the constructors. There are two features of the constructional approach to ontology that I should highlight right away. The first is that generally the types of objects you have in your ontology are determined by the constructors that generated the objects. For example, if you have a set constructor in your ontology, then the sets are the objects that result from applications of the set constructor. In addition, the identity of the constructed objects is dictated by their constructors and the inputs of the constructions. Continuing with the example in which our ontology includes a set constructor, as you will see, then consider two objects that have been produced or constructed by applications of the set constructor. So you have two sets. Then they are identical if and only if the objects that were used as inputs for the constructions are the same. So the constructor gives you the type and also gives you the identity of the objects generated. Now, there is a fairly long and venerable history of the constructional approach to ontology. Some of the references you have seen in previous talks are relevant here as well. Particularly relevant for our approach are some remarks of Gödel on the concept of set. In What is Cantor's Continuum Problem, Gödel refers to the concept of set, as he puts it, according to which a set is anything obtainable from the integers or some other well-defined objects, which we have called earlier the givens, by iterated application of the operation set of. So here, Gödel is referring to a broadly constructional view of sets, according to which they are generated by iterated applications of a constructor, the set of constructor. Now, more recent work on constructional ontology has been that of Kit Fine, and that has had a huge influence on this project. In fact, we built on a number of these ideas in this area. So I said something very general about the constructional approach to ontology. Now I want to say something about our specific approach to it. As I said earlier, in the constructional setting, you can define an ontology by specifying the givens, the constructors, and then characterizing the objects that are constructed. In our case, we are currently assuming that the pluriverse has an atomistic mereological structure. Then we take the atoms at the bottom of that structure and use them as givens, so as the starting point of our ontology. Then we have three constructors, the set constructor, the sum constructor, and the pair constructor. And we generate the target ontology by applying these constructors. And we produce the intended ontology after we exhaust all possible constructions. What I want to do now is to focus on three features of this approach and their benefits in the particular context in which we're using this approach. The features are the foundational role that the theory can play, its high degree of unification, and its constructural nature. Now, one sense in which this theory can play a foundational role in the context in which we are today is that it has object completeness in the following sense. The construction process, which you might think of as an object factory, supplies all the objects needed by the target top-level ontology, and so results in an object store where objects are available for you to use. So you go to the store and select the ones you want to use and apply them in your particular domain. Now, which objects should you use and how you should use them? Well, that requires all the expertise in data engineering and ontology that we have seen in previous talks. But the objects are there available for us to use. The theory also has categorical completeness in the following sense. The approach supplies the three basic types of objects for the target ontology: sets, parts, and tuples, together with the associated hierarchical relations. So the set elements relation, the whole parts relation, and the tuple places relation. In addition, the theory provides, as emphasized before and in Chris's talk, identity criteria for the objects. So the construction determines the condition for the identity of the constructed objects, and these are broadly extensional based on the type of constructor and its input. We've seen the extensional criterion for sets, so objects constructed through the set constructor. For parts, we have an extensional criterion based on the parts of objects, so two objects will be the same if and only if they have the same parts. This is as long as objects have been constructed using the mereological constructor, the sum constructor. The theory also has a high degree of unification. If you think about the usual context in which one adopts mereology and set theory, these are adopted as separate theories without an integrated development. They are just combined in the framework. Here we provide a common development of the two domains, and we add that of tuples as well. So the three target domains, those of sets, parts, and tuples, arise in similar ways, that is, through construction. The identity criteria that are crucial for the foundational role that the theory is supposed to play also have a common basis in the sense that the identity criteria for objects are extensional with some differences, as I mentioned a moment ago, based on the type of constructor. We also have in this framework a fairly uniform way of capturing key commonalities and differences between objects of the busy types. And we can do that by relying on features of the underlying constructors. I won't have time to vindicate this particular claim, but this will emerge in our report when it is published. And I'm happy to say a little bit more if time permits in the Q&A. Now, the nature of the framework is constructional, and some of the benefits are these. So categorical differences are constructional differences. The ways of constructions, in other words, are the basis for the differences in kinds of objects. The framework also makes sense of dependency. Some objects are built from other objects and hence depend on them. The framework is reductive, or as Matthew put it earlier, is generative. The ontology is built out of a relatively small set of fundamental objects, and so achieves parsimony in an important sense. Finally, construction can be a basis for consistency, provided that the construction process is managed appropriately. And this was a feature that Godot also highlighted. In fact, this is how the previous quote continues. So again, Gödel is speaking of the concept of set of a broadly constructional nature. And he says, this concept has never led to any antinomy whatsoever. That is, the perfectly naive and uncritical working with this concept of set has so far proved completely self-consistent. Once you see our theory, you also get to see our one of the key results, namely a consistency proof for the framework. So let me highlight the connection with four-dimensionalism. In particular, the core construction ontology, so our particular approach to constructional ontology, supplies the required types for the target TLOs with the required extensional identity criteria. And the types are sets, sums, and tuples, as I've said earlier. Now, how do we formalize the core constructional ontology? Now, we had and still have a number of options available. We consider some and then decided, motivated in part by our MVP approach, to go with a stage theoretic approach at this point. We also considered postulationism, a framework developed by Kit Fine. But since the framework would have required development of sophisticated logical machinery, it would have been it was easier to go with the stage theory, whose semantics is much better understood. An inspiration for the stage theoretic approach was Gödel's remarks mentioned earlier, as well as George Boulos's development of the iterative conception of set, which is based on a stage theory. The result of our formalization is what we call the core constructional theory, or CCT. Now, in order to introduce you to the theory, perhaps I can start by introducing you to the stage theory developed by Boulos, and that will be a good step towards our development of the stage theory. In a nutshell, what Boulos is doing is giving a theory of stages and of how sets are formed as stages. And from this theory, he's able to derive most of the axioms of standard set theory. Here's how Boulos proceeds. He introduces stages, in fact, infinitely many of them. And then each stage has an associated domain in which the objects are generated and collected at each stage. The stages are well ordered. So in effect, they are isomorphic to the ordinals. And the domain associated with each stage includes sets formed at that stage. So each domain is populated by the sets that are formed at that stage. A key component of the framework here is that each stage gives you all the possible sets that you could form using objects that have been previously formed. So there is some kind of maximality in this framework. At each stage, you always produce all the sets you could based on the objects that have been introduced before. Because domains are cumulative, that is, each domain includes the previous ones, so the domains grow as you proceed, then the structure has the characteristic V or cone-like structure of the universe of sets. Now, let me say something about how these stages are populated in Boulos's system. Suppose you start with no givens, then at the first stage, you form sets of things that existed previously, but nothing did, so you form the empty set. And then at the first stage, so stage one, you form the sets of things that existed previously, so you have the empty set and the singleton of the empty set. And you proceed in this way by looking at the previous objects and forming all sets possible. And you continue into the transfinite, which gives you infinite sets and ever-growing domains. If you start with some givens as opposed to no givens, as the example we had a moment ago, then the structure of your construction gets wider and the one of pure sets is included in it. Now, our work and our formalization of the core constructional ontology, so our CCT, generalizes and extends Boulos' stage theory in three main ways. And there are a number of other minor differences that are less important here. First of all, Boulos focuses on the hierarchy of sets. We provide a unified account of parts, sets, and tuples. The construction structure in Boulos' stage theory is tightly controlled. That is, at each stage, you have maximality. You produce or form all the sets you can. Whereas we allow a more flexible structure. We allow some delays in construction, and we allow the stages to branch so that two constructors can be applied separately before being combined together. And in future versions of our project, we expect to introduce even more flexibility in the construction process. Finally, in keeping with the target top-level ontologies, the core constructional theory includes objects that we call reified constructions. These are special objects that log the structure of the construction process. And we'll see an example of this later. So maybe let's focus on, by way of illustration, on a simple example of construction in our theory based on the sum constructor. So we get mereological constructions. Suppose that you start with three givens. That's what you have at stage zero. And suppose for the moment that you want to construct in a maximal way, that is all the mereological sums you can construct using this constructor. Maximality is permitted in our framework, though it is not required. Suppose for the moment we have that, for the sake of illustration at least. Then at stage one, we form all the possible mereological sums of those three givens. And these are the objects that we have. Now, suppose that at stage one, you want to apply the sum constructor again and try to generate all the possible mereological sums you can generate. Then you realize that you get nothing new. So all the mereological sums have been generated at stage one. As I said, what our framework does is introduce special objects, reified constructions, that track construction relations between the objects. For example, the three objects applied to the sum constructor give you the mereological sum of them. Now, this is our construction relation, and our framework introduces a reified construction, so an object in stage one that corresponds to that construction. So the object, since stages are cumulative, the object will continue to exist at stage two and in later stages. What's interesting about this framework is that even though the mereological sums are exhausted at stage one, not all reified constructions have been introduced at that point. For example, consider this construction relation that is obtained by using an object that was introduced at stage one. For example, the object that has the green box and the blue box as parts together with the red box. This construction relation wasn't available before because one of the components of the construction was not available before. So this is a new construction relation. So a corresponding object gets introduced at stage two, matching that construction. Now I said that we need to introduce reified constructions for all the construction relations at each stage. So these are all the reified constructions you would introduce one going from stage one to stage two, corresponding to all the construction relations available. Now, let me say something about the logical framework that we have adopted at this point. We built the CCT upon a framework known as Plural Logic, which is an extension of standard first order logic. You can think of Plural Logic as a classical two-sorted system. You have one sort for single objects, as you do in first order logic. And then you have one sort for plural expressions. So in particular, the system has two types of quantifiers, singular ones and plural ones. So consider the existential quantifier. You have in the system the singular quantifier, there is something such that, familiar from first order logic, but you also have a plural quantifier that in English we could read as there are some things such that. This quantifier quantifies over many things simultaneously. Sometimes we gloss this by saying that there is a plurality such that, even though that's less correct, even though it's very convenient. But plural quantifiers quantify over many things at once. So why did we choose this framework? In other words, what is the role of plural quantification in this setting? One is that it gives strength to the theory by allowing us to quantify over collections of objects in the range of singular quantifiers. And this has an analogy with the introduction of classes or even monadic second order quantification in a number of settings. Also, plural variables, going with the plural quantifiers, serves to describe naturally inputs to constructors. For example, if you're considering what the input of the sec constructor should be, a very natural answer is that, well, there are some objects, those that will be the elements of the set. And this is described in plural terms. Our framework allows us to formalize that notion at face value. So the inputs to a set constructor are some things, not a single object, but many things at once, those that eventually will be the elements of the constructed set. The primitive notions of our formalization are the logical notions from the background logic, the notions for the constructors, and we have three as primitive, set, sum, and pair. And then we have vocabulary, primitive vocabulary related to the construction process. So special predicates and constants for types of constructions. Finally, we have a little bit of primitive notions of infrastructure related to stages. So we have notions such as is a stage, exists at a stage, follows as a stage. This plays an infrastructural role, and we will consider in future versions of the project how possibly to avoid them. Now, the axiomatization of the core constructional theory currently includes around 60 between axioms, axiom schemes, and definitions, and they're organized into 8 key groups. We have axioms governing plural logic, so the background logic, which tells us how pluralities behave and what pluralities exist. Then we have axioms about stages that tell us what the structure of the stages is. Then we have axioms about the initial stages of the construction, and axiom specifying what exists at stages, that is axioms tying object, constructed objects to stages. Then we have axiom defining the behavior of the constructors and axiom specifying how the reified constructions are added to stages. That these are the objects that I illustrated in the mereological example, those objects that map construction relations into entities. Finally, we have axioms defining maximal extensions of stages and some classification axioms that partition the domain of the theory into 5 key groups. The 3 basic types, sums, sets, and tuples, and then we have reified constructions and stages. This gives you the formalization at a glance. I will not go over specific axioms, even though if there is interest, I can illustrate some of them, particularly natural choice would be the set constructor. And as you see here, the notions involved range fairly. We have a number of primitive constants. The projection const proj, the longer primitive notions are related to the machinery we need to specify the behavior of the reified constructions. So I will skip this for the moment. I just want to say a couple of things in closing. First, I want to say something about the role of the place of set theory and mereology in our core constructional theory. Using a natural definition of membership, so we don't have membership as primitive, we just have set construction as primitive. But using that, we can define a notion of membership. In particular, X is a member of Y if X is one of the things that was used to construct Y. And using this definition, we can deduce the axioms of Zermelo-Frankel set theory minus the empty set. So set theory unfolds from our construction. The reason why we don't have the empty set is that the input to constructors, to the set constructor, is a plurality, and plurality are stipulated to be non-empty. Now, what is missing from the standard, from a standard foundation of mathematics is the axiom of choice. We could recover the axiom of choice if we assumed a parallel principle of choice for the background plural logic, so principle of choice for pluralities. At the moment, we actually assume the axioms of atomistic general extensional mereology after defining partud. Again, partud is not a primitive in our system, it gets defined. But at the next stage of the project, we will drop these axioms and deduce them from our core constructional theory so that we have perfect parallel between set theory and mereology and their place in the theory. An important component of our project was, in addition to providing the formalization that I illustrated, was to prove that the formalization is consistent, and we have a mathematical proof of consistency for CCT. This is done, as often the case, by constructing a model within some chosen meta theory. Once you choose a meta theory, then what you effectively show is that the theory in question, here CCT, is shown to be consistent relative to this meta theory. It turns out that there are a number of options for meta theories we could be working with. At the moment, we are working with Morse-Kelly class theory, which takes the standard is standard foundation of mathematics, the set theory of Zermelo-Frankel with choice, and adds a layer of classes on top of the sets. An alternative would be just to use ZFC with an axiom stating that there is an inaccessible cardinal. This is a stronger meta theory, but it's also one that one could naturally use. If you would like to stay within the bounds of a standard foundation, you could be working within ZFC, but then you would have to consider weakenings of CCT, and there are a number of weakenings whose consistency can be proved within ZFC, but they're still quite powerful and good for a number of the applications here and weaker than the theory illustrated earlier. In closing, I should mention that to ensure logical data quality, our colleague Pavel Garbach is working on translating automatically the human readable axioms that I've showed at a glance earlier into CLIF. So this will avoid manual translation errors. Because of the presence of axiom schemas in CCT, the translation is lossy, and we anticipate further lossy translation to OWL. As I said, we're very keen on receiving feedback since this is at a very early stage. So questions and feedback are welcome. I think my time is also up, so I'll stop here, stop sharing, and then consider your questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Salvatore. I think you've managed to silence everyone there.
Matthew, I've got a question, if I might.
Good, yes, do please.
Okay, so it's Tim Watson. Salvatore, thanks for that. That was fascinating. You've got stages that you can use to construct. Presumably, that's countably infinite at maximum, so you can't have Aleph 1
Yes, no, at the moment, the theory actually assumes stages in a way isomorphic to the ordinals as well. And that's why then the meta theory gets, is needed to be stronger. So we go into the transfinite.
Right. And again, you talk about a total ordering. So how might you be able to deal with quantum processes where the cause and effect are a bit blurred? Could you use something like interval temporal logic to sort of say somewhere in here, this happens, we're not quite sure of the order, but we know about it before and after?
It's a very good question. So the problem here is not much for the core constructional theory, since those structures will not be part of the, in a way, background logical framework for the constructional ontology. Part of the rich structure that you illustrate will depend on the atoms, will be part of the atoms created at the bottom. So in fact, even if you try to map the type of problem, the interesting problem you raise with respect to the circles of information that we have seen, this will belong to space-time, which is the higher level. The core constructional theory will not be responsible for that structure. It will be able to accommodate that structure, but it will not be part of the basic theory. Maybe Chris wants to say something about to illustrate the division of labor here.
Yes, I think Salvatore's perfectly correct. And I think there's an interesting thing going on here is that if you look at the work that's been done, when you try and characterize the kind of thing that you're talking about, Tim, you need a lot of work to characterize it. And you've also got to realize we've got a possible world semantic. So there could be different interpretations you want across different possible worlds. And I think one of the questions is, at what stage do we want to generate the axiomatic framework to support this? So there is there's a question of, in my mind, other people might have more grander dreams, if you like. But in my mind, I think we're, for the stuff that we're doing, I think I mentioned in my slide, is we're going to stick to Euclidean stuff. Now, that's not to say, and I think Emanuele's, I don't know whether he's still here. I saw him here earlier. He's doing work on EMMO, where he's worrying about things down at the quantum level. So I think different people can, I think Sal's dream, if you like, for this, which I think is realizable, is this is a foundation that can be used for all sorts of things, including the things you're talking about. But when you're doing the space-time stuff, you've got to decide how much effort you want to put in to recapture the structure. And I think, as Sal said, the rich structure you're talking about is going to need an enormous amount of work. And I'm not close enough, but what I've, and I'm not an expert, but what I've seen, there is some formalization in there, that the things I talked about, Malamant and Hawking and Penrose and stuff, they've got some stuff in there, but I think it's a different kind of formalization to the thing that we're after. So I suspect it's a major project to realize the thing that you want. And okay. I suspect you might know more than I do.
Fantastic. And I've been abusing my privileges as a panelist. I can see that Keith May and Tom Sutton have both got questions in Q&A that we ought to
work. So Keith's question is, thanks, Salvatore. Can you say a bit more about how the temporal sequence of a series of stages is handled in this theory?
Okay, very good. And this question forces, in fact, to clarify a point that might be relevant even to the previous one. So the stages in the theory are not temporal. These are logical stages in which the objects get constructed, right? So the temporal domain will be part of the space-time that we recover. So you should think of the stages as showing the dependency between, the logical dependency, as it were, between the objects that eventually will be produced by the ontology, but it's not a temporal sequence. So when we talk about relaxing the structure of the stages and allowing branching, we're not talking about certain conceptions of time. We're just showing alternatives in which
that makes sense. And that's why when I was talking about this, I was talking about objects being inferred as much as construct. I mean, the construction is how they're inferred, but they're existing anyway. It's just how do you discover them?
Yes. So in the same way in which the singleton of the empty set is not generated later than the empty set, they are constructed in different stages, but there is nothing temporally can be inferred about their existence.
Sutton has a similar question. I was wondering the notions of constructed at time end, et cetera, in your talk differ from the traditional notions of rank in the von Neumann universe.
Very good. Another very good question. Thank you. So part of the structure that we generate is very similar to the accumulative hierarchy, but we're interested in generating a richer structure that can serve as a foundation for the target top-level ontology. So this structure has to produce simultaneously sets, meteorological sums, and tuples, and having the right interactions between them and also being consistent. So there is definitely a connection, and part of that structure is recovered here. We also produce sets in stages. We don't have the empty set, as I emphasized, so the structure is slightly different. But if we start with your givens, then you get a set theoretic hierarchy that looks very much like the cumulative hierarchy. Chris wanted to say
something. Sorry, Sal. And I'm not quite sure quite how you and I will interact on this, but I think one of the nice things about the sequence of stages, though it isn't the sequence of stages, it's the construction, is you've got some kind of dependence going on. So your example of the singleton was nice. So the standard example is Socrates and Socrates singleton. And there's a, if you like, Socrates singleton in some way depends on Socrates. And you've got the set, what you're engendering in this is the same kind of ontological structure. Well, I don't know whether you'd be happy with it. I would like to claim that it's true, but I don't know how happy you would be with that claim.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a question from Nigel. Could possible worlds be cast as possible filterings of infinite constructions at an arbitrary stage? The filtering may be a logical deconstruction.
Yeah, this is a hard question. I would have to ask a lot more to
provide. Can I say something?
Yeah, Yes.
Yeah, if you
I think we you might not recall, but we've been discussing this. Now, it may well be a filtering, but the problem is you don't have you don't have connection, you don't have Mariotte topology, and typically possible worlds are cast as maximally self-connected. So to get maximally self-connected, you would need more structure in order to be able to get to the possible world. So I think the time to get possible worlds is probably post CCO. However, done that, there probably is some way that you could go back and filter it to get it. But I think the structure to get you possible worlds comes later in space time. I don't know if that's any help, Nigel.
That sounds good. Well, they can't speak, Chris, so he'll have to.
Well, he can answer live. He can.
Oh, can he? Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, and I've got here we go. We've got a question. Does this approach potentially lead to fundamentally different ways to formulate provenance?
Oof.
I think I might try and answer that and say the answer is no, because provenance is fundamentally about how data is created, and data is just some of the stuff that this stuff generates. I think the answer there is no. Again, it comes later. It's not something that happens at the CCO level. Okay, so Emmanuel has asked a question, so he is still here. Chris, thanks for mentioning our effort with the EMO. I see several parallelisms between the Salvatore CCO and the EMO objective in being a consistent framework to build objects from the very bottom atomistic level. However, we use Mariotte topology as foundation following this, while CCO is using set theory. Not quite sure there's a question, but
I don't know what Sal wants to say. To.
It's directed at you, so you might want to go first. I have just a little clarification. Sal,
I think Emanuele, I think we use Mariology and then later Mariotte topology in ours, but set theory. So I think the difference between EMMO and us is that you're more parsimonious. You don't help yourself to set theory. You just stick with your Mariology. And I think you're right. I see the same sort of things when you're talking about starting with the universe and tessellating and then fusing to get up. I think it's very constructive. I think I said that in my email to you. I think there's something very similar going on. But we have three constructors, and I think you would only have two. So you wouldn't have the set constructor. You just have the sum and the relation constructor in your. And so this is an example of how Salvatore's CCT, if I've got the names right, and Sal will no doubt interrupt me and point out the finer details that I've got wrong, but the Sal CCT could be re-engineered to get what you want. And I think in some ways, EMMO could be seen as one of the possible worlds within this particular 4D approach. And Manuel, I don't know if you could, I don't know whether you want to answer. You can probably type something if you want to. I think that's the limit of our technology here. Okay.
Okay. Well, I think that's time up there. So thank you very much. And thank you both, Chris and Salvatore, the really fascinating presentations. I mean, I've seen them, bits of these before, but it's still really good to see it again.